Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I've noticed posts covering finance and property news. Another Monday evening. Of course, Edwin is with me once again for some more stupidity. Not from you, Edwin, but from the market. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Martin. I just want to get it clear. Are you AI? I mean, I know that they're still talking about Kate being missing, and that's all AI that we're seeing on the internet. I just want to know if I'm talking to AI or IA.
No, it's MLN, actually. No, I'm not AI. You can tell here because if I move, my background changes, and if I come back, there you go, I'm back in focus. So no, last time I checked.
It is you, Martin. It is you. But it's interesting how things are coming to bear now. Like we're watching a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about in previous months and over the last 6 to 12 months, how the mainstream are catching up. So yeah, we're definitely not AI, but we are very intelligent in keeping up ahead of the trend. I don't know what acronym you would put to us, but it is rather interesting. And talking about acronyms and talking about memes and talking about charts, I found the perfect chart for your announceables, Martin.
Yeah, you mean this one here? Yeah, immigrants need somewhere to live. House prices go up. Houses are too expensive. Tell people we must increase housing supply. Import more immigrants to build houses. Houses don't get built. Immigrant. Yeah, etc. Repeat and wash. Yeah, this is the old world, new world, isn't it? Eh? We've been saying this for so long, and well, you know, there you go. In a meme.
I thought I was just so perfectly put, and that goes back to that tweet that I put earlier on with regards to over the weekend where there was an exo on Kookaburra Cove put up a story of what he experienced on the out on the open house inspection and looking for a rental. I get the feeling it was in Melbourne. And there were something like 70 to 80 families attending the open house, to the point where the real estate agent was brought to tears because there was so much that allegedly she's so much weight on her shoulders, and she has to come to a decision. She hasn't seen anything like this in 16 years, and this is what I put up on that tweet. Basically saying and stating the government's really not interested in fixing the situation or the problem that we're in. And if people think that things were going to be any different under a Liberal government, well, you know, they can whistle Dixie, because as you and I brought it up back in 2019, when we brought to the attention of the general public and to our followers that the fix was in then, regardless of who got into power, regardless of who took the helm, this was always going to happen. Now, I would say that it wouldn't have been much different. It might have been a little bit slower in terms of the amount of people coming in, but it was always going to happen. This was always, the fix was in as far back as 2019. And no matter how much the politicians continue to talk and chatter and have a go at each other, as you and I keep on saying, they just keep on talking and talking, and I just love the word that you just coined, and that is the announceables, and that meme just says it all, because they can keep on talking. What will really mean something for the Australian community, the Australian people, and all the migrants that are coming in is when we see shovel in the ground, and when we see machinery turning over soil and building these homes that are allegedly going to build. The time is passing, and we're getting closer to this 5-year term. And as far as I know, there's only 25,000 to 35,000 starts under the government for housing, so for dwelling starts. And all we know is that by 2026 we're going to end up with 95,000 completions in 2026. So we're going backwards even with the private sector, We're increasing the numbers of under the current immigration policy, we're increasing the numbers, but and we're just going around in circles, as we say.
Yes, and I don't know whether this has anything to do with it, Edwin, but there was this little gem, right? Look at the split of training from, the politicians. Most of them are from arts or from the law. Very few with, science or economics or anything useful, right? I wonder whether this explains it. And I come back to this fundamental point that a lot of political activity is all about making sure that you try to get yourself re-elected. So you'll say anything, do anything to get re-elected. We saw that in Tasmania over the last few days, where Labour, threw out this sort of thought bubble just before the local election to try and encourage more first-time buyers to vote Labour, right? Where they said, "Well, we'll help with more first-time buyers." I mean, the fact of the matter is that none of the leadership that I'm seeing are actually genuinely interested in solving the long-term issues that Australia is facing. That's my conclusion. So it's all about announceables. It's all about winning the next election. It's all about, doing whatever you can to make sure that you get back in power. Whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing to do for the long-term prospects of Australia or Australians. And that's the big problem that I've got, because most of the policies that are actually being created at the moment are really not doing anything like needs to be done to be able to really solve the underlying issues that you and I have been speaking about for such a long time.
Yeah, and this is where I asked John, they put that up from the Financial Review. I asked John, and I said, "Look, can you whether or not he knows whether how many politicians hold real estate licenses? I'd like to know. I mean, yeah, Dusty would like to know. Dusty would like to know how many politicians hold real estate licenses or are in training to obtain their real estate licenses, because that seems to be the norm now, from politics to real estate." Whether it be as an investor, as a major shareholder of a building company or a development company, I mean that's been the trend for the last 3 4 decades, more so over the last 2 decades. But I'm just interested to know, or Dusty's interested to know, Martin. So we've got to put keep on asking John if he can keep that up, and because they've got more resources than you and I have to work on that. But I get the feeling that it's going to be a lot of politicians, as they retire, they'll go into the real estate arena, and who knows, a few of them might even become auctioneers.
Well, they've probably got the gift for the gab enough to do that. The other interesting observation is, and I don't know whether you saw this particular article, but house prices are on the march as buyers get in before rate cuts. I thought that was really interesting, right? So let's buy now before rates get cut. But the other little tagline on the bottom of this headline was that investors are getting out. And I thought it was just worth sharing a few slides on this, because there was so much noise over the last week, all on the same theme. So, for example, this one suggesting that investors are no longer active in Queensland. They've ditched plans to buy, et cetera, et cetera. And we've touched on this previously, Edwin, that Queensland looks a particularly worrisome area to invest in, because of some of the changes that they've made in the legislation. But look at these slides. Here's one from Victoria. One in five sales is a landlord bailing in Victoria, according to this particular article. Or go here. This is actually thousands of Queensland landlords listed rental properties for sale in Queensland in the first 2 months of the year in a further blow to already struggling tenants. Or go here. Almost 10,000 New South Wales landlords have dumped their investment property sales, doubling in some areas amid soaring holding costs. Or here, more than 1,500 landlords have listed rental properties for sale in South Australia. Spot the common theme, Edwin. Spot the common theme.
Yeah, look, and there are a number of backstories to that that obviously the mainstream media aren't going to talk about. And we go number one is that we have seen a lot of investment properties come onto the market, as we talk to the real estate agents that we have relationships with, and I've had relationships with for the last 3 decades. and a lot of have come on the market. A lot of them have been apartments in Sydney. But now we're getting to a point where there's an equilibrium between the apartments and housing across many many markets in the Sydney region, as well as the other regions such as your Melbourne's and also Brisbane. So it's interesting how a lot of the shoddy investment properties got put out. And the unfortunate thing, Martin, is because of the low stock numbers on market for sale, a lot of people went ahead and bought them, and they were buying lemons, with no idea as to what to do with them, and paying top dollar in a lot of the cases. I mean, look, we encourage our buyers or our clients to buy properties that haven't been renovated and need a facelift, or may even need major renovations, because they can get a bargain. But at least we guide them along as to the costs that they would be up for, and even after the renovation, they're still below the sales, or the current sales of the properties in those markets. They still sit way below where they can, they're benefiting of two things: one, the equity in the property, and secondly, they've done the renovations to their liking, as opposed to somebody else's liking. And third in that point is the fact that the renovations have been done properly, and there's been a lot of care and a lot of attention to detail. So you don't know what you're buying when you're buying something that's been renovated, and they don't produce the proper documentation, or they don't produce, if it's not documentation, they don't produce or let you know how things were done. And when you start checking into these so-called renovated homes, you start seeing the shortfalls in them. No different to new construction. So that's one thing. The other thing is that we said, how long ago did we say? Almost 12 months ago, between 8 and 12 months ago, we or around about 8, 10 months ago, we said that the WeChat chatters were out of, they were calling out in Melbourne. And it's only now that the mainstream media are cotton on to that. Now, there was a lot of talk over the last about 4 or 6 weeks ago. There's a lot of chatter on a lot of social media platforms discussing whether or not whether anybody really knew whether why there were so many numbers coming, so many listings coming on the market in Melbourne. But you and I knew, Martin. You and I knew what the majority of those listings from the WeChat chatterers, as well as from your surveys, that a lot of those listings were from investors that were dumping the listings, and not necessarily the majority being apartments, but a lot of them were the houses that got bought in the fringes of the Melbourne market, and now they've been put back. They're being put on the for sale ledger. Hence the reason why the rental listings there have been very, very low. So this is where people have got to be very cautious and very careful what they buy, because a lot of the lemons, unfortunately, have been sold. And people have jumped in not knowing what they're buying, and all they're being able to see is the fresh lick of paint that somebody's given the place, and a shiny new bench top here and there, and maybe a bathroom, a so-called showroom bathroom renovation, and they paid top dollar for it. So it's really nothing to what we've already shared with our followers along the last 12 months, and the trends that have been happening, and who's influencing these trends is the groups that we keep on talking about, that we refer to. We've categorized the different groups, because that is what we see on the ground. That is what we see live on the ground, and we can, and our followers are able to be ahead of the game. So it's not new news, but it's interesting that it's only now that the mainstream are picking that up. So it's good from our point of view, I guess. On another note there, Martin, it just goes to show that quite a number of the reporters from the mainstream media are starting to catch on, and they're catching up to our shows, and good luck to them. Hopefully they press your Patreon links there in at the bottom of our the YouTube channel, and contribute to the show, so you can keep on producing it.
Yeah, well, we should say hi to all those in the mainstream media watching the show and picking up the next ideas for the articles over the next couple of weeks. So you've heard it all here. We've been talking about this for so long. And, you know, just to sort of round out this part of the conversation, it's worth just reflecting on what the RBA said this week. So there was a headline saying, reality check, the strong local jobs market will delay interest rate cuts and undermine critics who claim the RBA lifted rates too high at the end of last year. I think that's pretty important. And, you know, this one as well, which was the RBA's admission on rate rises, it looks as though they will continue to hold rates higher for longer. No surprises, of course, we've been talking about this for some time, that the chances of rates coming back very quickly are pretty unlikely. And now some people are suggesting there will be no rate cuts this year at all. So maybe next year if we're lucky, because inflation is still going to be bubbling along. The financial stability report, which they came out with last week, was actually quite interesting insofar that there was a very interesting statement. I made a show on this yesterday, actually, if people want more detail. But it is interesting that basically the RBA is saying, well, households are bearing up under higher rates, but 1 in 20 households have negative cash flow, even according to the RBA. And of course, the RBA is using data that is, well, a little bit filtered, because it's actually from the securitized data sets that they use. And of course, they've made certain assumptions in their modeling about what's going to happen to interest rates. So in fact, the financial stability report, which came out last week, used assumptions for February, when the markets were expecting rate cuts August. Now, of course, they're talking into the year. So those assumptions are probably wrong too. So my point is that the financial stability review that came out doesn't tell the full story. And it comes back to what we've been saying on this show, Ed. And we know there are lots and lots of people really caught at the moment, because if you've got a property that you are struggling to pay the mortgage on, what do you do? You know, it's very hard to sell the property and get into the rental sector, because rentals are, you know, like hen's teeth. So what you do is you talk to the bank and you try and restructure the loan as best you can and sort of muddle through, which means you don't actually appear as a delinquent loan, but some under pressure. And then the other factor that's coming in again, and I see this all the time now, is the banks pushing people to list their property and to get out and to release equity to repay the bank. But again, where do you go? And that's really the problem. So with the rental sector and the owner sector both under pressure, it's a huge, huge issue. And I have to say that, again, I don't think the RBA is actually being that honest with us in terms of what's really going on. And remember, of course, that the financial stability report is all about, will the banks survive or will they won't? You know, and basically the RBA says, no, the banks are going to be fine. Well, of course, the banks are going to be fine. But what about individuals? What about those households that are actually buying bad properties, you know, not doing the due diligence, being forced to jump quickly because they're desperate to buy anything? What about those people who cannot find anywhere to live and they're now actually in rental property or are living in tents? And what about those first-time buyers who have been cajoled to try and buy into the market at a time when it's very hard to do so? You know, the true cost of 20 years of bad policy are coming home to roost, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we can assume is that the RBA really don't know what they're doing. I really don't know why we're putting the bill for the people that sit there, and why they're even getting paid. But look, outside of that, the reality on the ground is the stories of people being young children being taken out of schools that they've enjoyed and you know, from having long-term school friends and that, and having to go from a selective or private school to just a public school because parents have had to make some cuts. A lot of other students, a lot of other people, young people I know, from families that I know, they've the parents have to trim down on the sporting events, so there's been a lot of what would the word be, sociological changes, a lot of changes within the society that you and I, you know, we in our younger days, we enjoyed. But now they can't enjoy it because everything costs. One could say that the younger generation now are more akin to buying everything new and something that's got a tag or a big label on it. And whereas when I was growing up, I had to wait for my friends hand-me-downs for soccer boots and so forth. But the thing is, but we still enjoyed life. But we still enjoyed on the weekends. We still had three meals in the day. Even during the week, we still had breakfast. We still had sandwiches throughout the week. And the big day was on Friday, where we got some bit of pocket money, and we were able to buy meat pie. So and then we go home for dinner. But now there's a lot of families that are going without mutton. There's a lot of there are a lot of things that are going without, and there's going to be more of that pain coming through. And that is how they're holding on to a lot of these homes, the majority is owned by the bank anyway. But they're holding on because they've really got no other choice, as you mentioned earlier on. And you've got the your retirees, your downsizers, your empty nesters, whatever you want to call them, that even they can't move because the cost of transaction is very, very high. There's stamp duty when they buy again. And if they want to stay within close proximity to the family, they want to stay within the suburb, but there's nothing available. So they're more or less, as I shared a few weeks back, when you start trying to equate what could be sold in a given area, an older home, let's say a two-story older home, you get $2 million for it, and then you want to downsize to a villa, but because downsize to a two-bedroom villa in the same area, but because the villa's been renovated, you're almost paying 1.5 for the villa anyway, or 1.6 for the villa. You've just sold a four or five-bedroom home, two-story, because you couldn't maintain it, you couldn't keep up with the maintenance of it and the pool maintenance and everything else. And then you have to stump up 1.5 to get a villa within close proximity to your grandkids. But it's not only 1.5, Martin, it's 5% on top of that, which is your stamp duty and anything else that may still need to be fixed. So it's a hell of a lot of money. So you're not really getting much change at the end of the day when you're making those sort of transactions. So in and why? Because there's not much available, and your competition increases because for downsizers, the competition increases because you're competing with other downsizers, you're competing with silent tigers and WeChat chatters, you're competing with the desperate housewives that just want to get into the market. So they'll settle for a small villa or a townhouse, as because they can no longer afford a freestanding home in the areas that they want to live in. So all these choices that have been made, why? Because there are just such high demand that's coming from abroad, that's local, people going back into the market, state immigration. We're getting the jump of very soon wealthy individuals that are going to come over from Victoria that are going to pull up stumps with the that hold that have industrial complexes there, and they're going to uproot the whole family and come over to New South Wales because the land tax is so high. So there's a lot of pressure on that's going to come on in terms of home buyers here in the Sydney and the extended Sydney region. In Queensland, obviously the low numbers there are just absolutely flabbergasting as well. But a lot of people now migrating back to New South Wales because, as I've always said, Queensland's really a retirement village. The majority of the markets there are retirement villages, if anything, or you have to be young to enjoy a lot of the nightlife, if there's any left. So all these things are just crazy, but it comes back to a central focal point, and that's the immigration policy of the government that we're in. And until that changes, we could whistle Dixie, we could keep on arguing, keep on tweeting out, keep on putting posts on X, keep on doing all sorts of things, but the government just seems to be walking around like this, and not paying attention, not listening, not watching to see what's happening. Why? Because they're sitting pretty. As I've said before, it's an industry that maybe if a lot of young people that are watching our show You know, I want a first tip and a bit of advice. Aspire to be a politician, because once you're in, you're in. That's it. It's a lifelong, lifelong career, with good pay and good pay increases. But you just got to have a thick skin, unfortunately. But hey, it's better than than only having one meal a day and having to scratch your head where the next how you're going to fill up your the tank in your car to get from point A to point B the following week and so forth, because you're trying to have a roof over your head, whether it be a rental, whether it be a purchase.
Yeah, well, be a politician. I mean, I think of K Rudd, who's now over in the US as ambassador over there, you know, post prime ministership. So it's pretty crazy. But it's interesting if you just think about the unbalanced situation that we have, where you know so much of the story seems to revolve around real estate. And you know, you put this slide up a little while ago, which said that a GP's given up on the medical profession to actually go and invest in property. Well, what do you think about that, Edwin?
Well, this was interesting, right? This is interesting because this is the Witcher Chatterers have picked this story up, and they've started talking about what's going on. Obviously, from the point of view of curiosity, because it's doing the rounds amongst the Witcher Chatterers, the different investment groups, and what they're talking about. But it's no different to what we know and the Witcher Chatterers know. I read this. I actually read the story and read the background to this to this story. And from the surname of the doctor, it appears that she's of a Filipino origin. But the Witcher Chatterers nevertheless started to make a point around the area of why are so many professionals going into the property investment arena. And from their point of view, obviously they started talking about what we call, and what I've shared in the past about syndicates, and there are what we would call, syndicate leaders that are holding a lot of money in, I guess, in our vernacular, or bring it to the point, is that is what we would otherwise call bear trusts, that many WeChat professionals have in place here, and holding large sums of money. Anything from $5 to $35 million is individuals that we know of that are holding these, what would be considered as bear trusts for beneficiaries that are still abroad, and waiting. And perhaps you could explain to our viewers what bear trust is in better terms than what I can. But it's the most raw agreement that you could have that it's not documented, but yet your whole, my understanding is you're holding something for, I call these syndicates, but bear trust. And this is where what they're talking about, and they started talking amongst themselves, obviously in the groups, started talking about, well, yeah, we know so and so, we know so and so. And as I said before, Dusty and I, we know three, four groups that are holding anywhere between $5 and $35 million and $33 million, as in trust for individuals that have sent them the money over the years to literally buy property, they benefit off that. And until such time that these parties are able to come over to Australia and set foot in Australia, they themselves don't benefit. And I guess this sort of alludes to the case, the famous case of the Obeids, and the bear trust that were being held by my understanding is by the by companies under companies, mining companies held for the Obeid families and their children. So it's an interesting form. It's an interesting way of things. And then we started, following on from that tweet, I put that out because obviously it was of interest to the WeChat chatters, and it's nothing new to them to hold millions of dollars on behalf of their relatives, or could be just simply friends or acquaintances abroad. And this is where over the years, I know, and I mean, being involved in the industry, I've known of this happening from as early as the early 2000s. I saw a lot of these, you could say different trusts, different forms of ways that money was coming into and being into Australia and being parked in real estate. And it's only going to get bigger now. And this is what we alluded to last year because of what's happening over in Asia, in China, in that part of the world where there's so much instability and people don't want to take the money back to China. There's a lot of people that live outside of China that are holding on to money, have been holding on to money in Canada, America, Europe, Malaysia, Singapore area. But sooner than later, we said that that money was going to continue to be funneled into Australia. And this is so th this I'm not saying that this lady is what is setting this up, but this is just a prelude, or this doctor was setting that up, but this is just a prelude and a point of discussion to bring up the simple fact that there's a lot of people here that are holding on to a lot of money. And we alluded that that money was going to come back into the property market, and it has been doing so over the last 3 months. And we were talking about how that was going to impact a lot of the exclusive, the high-end markets is where a lot of this money is parked. And so it's interesting because of the chatter, because of what this. So it's nothing new, but it was just an interesting point of reference that created a lot of chatter amongst the WeChat chatterers.
Yeah, and just to underscore, there are a whole bunch of tricks that are used, some above the waterline in terms of legality, some a little bit shady, that allows significant amounts of money to flow into the country. We have very limited money laundering controls in Australia, which means that a lot of money can be sort of floated through. But even if it's not illegal, it does increase the buying capacity, particularly at the top end of the market, of people who are interested in holding for the long term, on the assumption that Australia is a much more stable environment relative to many others. And so you get stupidities where you get significant fighting almost literally, actually. In fact, you put this little video up, right, which illustrates the battle between the silent tigers and the WeChat chatterers.
Well, this is the thing. So this is what we've got now is we've got another large contingency, and pretty soon the new kids on the block are also going to start making. We're going to be talking about a lot more about them in months to come. But yeah, look, that's it. And this is like, well, what I witnessed over the weekend and the open houses and the auctions that we were participating in or not participating in, we're just watching and observing from the sideline. I mean, the ones were more in the higher end, in the northwest region and upwards of that. The WeChat chatterers were just beat the silent tigers hands down. But it's an interesting move where the silent tigers have really picked up a lot of momentum, have been further and beyond the fringes of the Blacktown LGA, going more towards your Penrith area. So it's rather interesting how they're pushing the markets, because again, we go back to the fact that they've got money. They've liquidated a lot of assets in India. India's had a very strong property market in the last 2 3 years, where properties have doubled, in some parts, tripled in price, and that money's coming in, and it's an easy inflow of money, because there's a lot less conditions for starters. The government really isn't restricting the amount of money that the silent tigers can pull out of the country like they do in China, and likewise in Vietnam for the new kids on the block. So those stops haven't been put in place in India or China. And quite frankly, as again we pointed out before, that the younger generation here that are second generation, here from the silent tigers, that they don't, some of them haven't even set foot in India, and they prefer to to have a permanent roof over their heads here than have some sort of asset over in India. And so a lot of the Silent Tigers are liquidating it, notwithstanding also the new migrant influx that we've had over the last 12, 18 months. So it's, but there are some areas where they're absolutely getting smashed nonetheless. But I feel that sooner than later, the Silent Tigers are going to take it back up to the WeChat chatterers, and they're going to really stand the ground. But it's just our observations how that, and look, quite frankly, and that puts any first-time buyer in those areas that local first-time buyers that have got any notion of going in at the selling agents' guides, where a lot of the properties are being sold for upwards of 15-20% of the guides. And I mean, you just sort of see a lot of the young first-time buyers just walk away with with the heads just drooping downwards and despondent, and it's really heartbreaking, unfortunately. But that's the market there. That's what we are seeing, and that's what we're reporting. And it's sad. It really is sad, Martin.
Yeah, it's an unequal battle. If you are a local Australian saving really hard to try and get into the market, you're now competing with people who actually have much more access to cash and capital, and therefore it's an unequal battle. Plus, of course, as we've said several times previously, some of those purchases are larger properties that are then actually restructured to be able to create a series of very small living units that can generate significantly higher rental returns relative to your average property. And that, again, distorts the market. And it's not equal across all suburbs, but in some suburbs, I would say that first-time buyers are pretty much now squeezed out of the market completely. The borrowing capacity is down 40% or more. And that's going to be a real problem. The other issue, of course, is supply. And you highlighted the fact that this was a project that was actually quite lauded, and it's sensible in a way. It's an inner Melbourne property where they've mixed social and private rental homes, and that's basically on a redeveloped site. But how many do we need, Edwin? How many do we need? And there was this one here that said, well, actually, Sydney needs 200 towers every single year just to keep up with the mass immigration housing demands, and that's from Migration Watch. But the fact of the matter is that, the Melbourne story there, whilst it's good, necessary, but certainly not sufficient, is it, to solve the issues that we've got in terms of the lack of availability? And then the other question is, how many people want to live in high-rise?
Yeah, and this is the thing. We're starting to, the definition of homes is starting to unfold, Martin, right? I mean, look, you and I and our followers already knew this, right? So it's nothing new to us. So we already knew that that it's not really homes. It's really apartments or units or dog boxes or badly ventilated, spaces in badly built high-rise developments. Yeah, but we should not be calling them homes. But that's what it is. That's what it's looking at. As you said, it's a good thing that we're starting to see some, a little bit of light. Whether it be a glowworm in a dark cave, in the distance, but it's really a drop in the ocean in comparison to what we really need. It's going to be interesting as these monstrosities are being built to see who's going to manage, how they're going to be managed, and how the common areas are going to fare. I don't know, Martin. It's my conspiracy theory, side of the brain that tells me that shit. These things are going to be, people are going to be living in squalor if they're badly managed the object would be the equivalent of strata companies or building managers. Then they'll have to, are they going to, is the building manager also going to be managing the individual lots or the individual units? It's going to get messy. It's going to get messy. That's the first thing. Secondly, I still keep tabs with with a lot of big developers, and they still don't want to build. They still don't want to build these so-called homes or these apartment towers because the cost of construction, because you know, they do not have the assurance that a lot of these are going to be completed, or when they're going to complete it, or how long the money's going to be tied up for. And this is in the space of the private sector, right? As much as again, so they're really still waiting for that government handout, that government handout or hand up, whatever you want to call it, or grant for them to start building, because of the cost is just astronomical. And when then we start looking at numbers, and this is why I like looking at numbers as opposed to percentages, because it starts to paint a real picture of what's really happening out there. And when they start seeing that we need 200 towers every single year, people are going to have to start asking themselves the question, where are they going to be built? So define a home. Where are you, how are they going to be built, and where are they going to be built? Who the hell wants these towers towering over their backyard, Martin? Hence the reason why you've got so many issues with the local government areas going toe-to-toe with Mins, and because of the ratepayers that are looking at the local government or the councils to control. To really control it as much as the state want to override a lot of things. But you know, who wants this monstrosity, and how long do you have to put up with it? And it's not only putting up with the construction, but it's, can you put up with the amount of can the surrounding areas put up with the amount of new families living in these hubs? How long before they pick up stumps and and move further out is the obvious question. And this is why I say that a lot of the fringe areas, your of the Sydney region, your Central Coast, your mountains region, and over the mountains, and all the way to your old neck of the woods, is gonna skyrocket over the next 12 to 18 months.
Absolutely. And the story, of course, is by far simple and straightforward to solve. But, you know, we've talked about strong migration. The very high migration is something to look at. But then, of course, you've got the quality of construction question. And just to remind everybody, the Mascot Tower saga, well, is it really over at last? Well, maybe, maybe not. But the key point there is that the government settlement program that is part of the solution means that many owners are going to be receiving far less than they originally spent when they purchased the property. And of course, since 2019, they've not been able to get access to their properties, and have been forced to pay levies, mortgages, and remediation costs, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of investors won't get a lot of help. So the fact of the matter is that, like it or not, the Mascot Towers story, it really tells us just how seriously this plays out. And the other interesting issue, and it's sort of very strongly linked, is was this particular story, Edwin, where you've got a strata company. So these are the companies who are responsible for the ongoing management of these high-rise buildings once they've been built. Well, this particular one, according to an ABC investigation, well, there's a bit of an issue there.
Yeah, major issue. This is interesting how some of our followers reached out weeks before as well, and were asking me questions on X in direct messaging and via email as to how they could be helped with regards to issues that they were having with the strata managers. And with this particular one that I put up there on X, I said, it's not net strata by any chance, is it? Or I can't remember, I think it was, or let me guess, it's net strata. And then within a week or so of that conversation I was having with our follower on the DMs on Twitter. She said yes, and then this story came out. But this highlights the shenanigans that have been going on for decades, and a lot of it really stems from 2012, 2013, where there was a failure by the Foreign Investment Review Board, and basically they failed us. They failed the Australian population when they basically we could sell as real estate agents, or we could sell entire unit blocks and complexes to foreign investors, and because the a lot of the apartments were owned by foreign investors, they really didn't care how much the strata levies were. They didn't really, really care, because their purpose and the reasons for buying were totally poles apart from what the local Aussies were wanting to buy them for. And obviously that was as a stepping stone into the property market, and things just went nuts from there. And obviously strata rolls, as we call them, or like rent rolls, the strata rolls were worth a lot of money. I mean, one strata roll in one building, in other words, the management over one building, could be worth anything, upwards of $100,000 to a company. And when you've got companies that are managing, 30, 40, 50, 100, 150, 200, 500 unit blocks, that's a hell of a lot of change, right? And now, I've known for decades that the way that the strata companies, the way that they make money, is not necessarily from the strata levies that you would think that's where they make money. That's not how they make money. They basically, if it was only strata levies as such in the black letter of the law, the strata levies, the fees that you pay, that's not really how they make money. They make money by the kickbacks that they get from the maintenance contractors, the cleaning contractors, the lift contractors, the gardeners, the electricians, the plumbers, all the kickbacks. Generally, it's anywhere between 5 and 10% of the bill, and then there's it could be upwards or up to 20% of a kickback on the insurance policies that they get. Now, interestingly enough, the insurance policies and there is a disclosure, but most of the owners corporations, or the members of the owners corporations of the committee, don't really pay attention, close attention to that. They just take it as gospel that everything that the strata manager is looking after them. Well, they're not really looking after them. They're looking after themselves first and foremost, and they're looking after their pockets. And it's only now that a lot of people are waking up to it, because it's costing them a hell of a fortune when you go from paying $1,200 a quarter in your strata levies to $2,500 to $4,000 a quarter, and you've got to start asking yourself the question, where the hell is all this money going to? And then you've got your special levies for ongoing works, because the original strata company that was managing the complex had a dubious relationship with the builder slash developer of the complex. And when they first handed over the strata management of that complex to the strata company, they did nothing within the first 2 years, where a lot of the regulatory procedures have to be done in order to be able to chase the builders and to chase the developers and have them, have them by the cojones or by the throat in order for them to stump up. And this is where your mascot towers fell over, because of the dodgy deals that were done in the back office, because you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you, as they say. So it's only coming. So the chickens are coming home to us. Then how much more are we going to find out moving forward, now that some people are awake to the shenanigans? And it's come, why are they being woken up? It's because of the sheer reality that costs are increasing. And as I've said for a very long time on the show, and before we started sharing on the having the Monday night Monday evening property rants, I've been sharing and writing about the dangerous liaisons the strata managers have with developers and builders, and why people need to pay very, very close attention to what goes on, because the costs are increasing, and major works are not cheap. I was speaking to a builder on Saturday morning, I was sitting down with the builder, and he was telling me one of his best mates has just set up a company. Wait for it. He's just set up a company to fix bathrooms in newly built apartments that haven't even been occupied. Yeah, that don't even have 100% occupancy after the sale. It's crazy stuff. It's absolutely crazy, and it's only going to get worse, Martin.
Absolutely. And just to underscore, strata companies are there to maximize the profit of the strata company, not actually to do the right thing for the owners of the properties that they're actually responsible for. And that's a significant conflict. And quite often it means that corners are cut and the properties are not maintained. And therefore you get all of the subsequent downstream issues with leaks and other those things that need to get fixed. And then nobody quite knows who's responsible. It's a mess. And what is happening at the moment? More and more people are being funneled into the high-rise sector where all of these issues are actually lurking. So that's a really, really important thing to take about. And if you're going to buy high-rise, you must do your due diligence on the way in. But even the best due diligence won't necessarily pick everything up, unfortunately. Let's just move on to the numbers because actually, numbers are going down, Edwin. Numbers are going down. So, as we expected, as we come into the Easter phase, in Sydney last week, we had 16,139, now 16,040. So, a bit of a slide there. And, it's still worth underscoring that in the Sydney region, the numbers are still lower than last year. So, not a good story for the Sydney region.
No, I believe that the market's turned it's going to be interesting to see what happens now moving forward, because we've had three consistent weeks, although we're not showing it on now. But if you look at the numbers from the previous week, our followers can see how they've been trending down. We said that the same thing happened around the same time last year, where the numbers started to trend down. Currently, we're about 700 or so less listings on market than what we were in 2023. And the interesting thing, well, I was looking at 23 numbers before the show, and it was from here on out we went on a slide, all the way till mid spring, where we were looking at numbers close to the very much in the low 15,000s. So if the same trend follows, which I have this feeling that that is what we're going to see, and we end up with less numbers that we saw in 2023, it is going to be I mean, we're already nail-biting territory. I don't know what else to call it, because it is going to be pretty much a vendor's market, and no matter what crap gets put on the market is just going to get absorbed, because the demand is certainly going to, is only increasing. It's not decreasing. And regardless of what our mate Tom and Mark Borah say, there's people holding on. People are holding on, Martin. And these the rate rises haven't really haven't again, because we go back to the fundamentals. Where do they go? Where do they go if they sell? They're doing without a lot of things in order to stay in the principal place of residence. They're doing big borrowing and stealing, no doubt, in order to stay put, because what's their choice? And I'm talking about the Sydney region, and the Sydney region according to Domain, not to all the other property houses out there that have extended Sydney regions. So yeah, it's not looking good, and it's not gonna moving forward. I don't think it's going to get any better. I think we're pretty much following the same trend, except with a lot less listings on market. Obviously, the other thing that I feel strongly is influencing the number of listings coming on market is obviously the geopolitical issues. And people are just gonna stay put. So it's gonna be a very, very, very cold winter for buyers, unfortunately.
Yeah, which means that prices are probably going to have more upward momentum rather than downward momentum. Now, if we look at Melbourne, a bit of a similar story. In fact, a more extreme move. So 26,948 last week, And if we look at this week, 26,589. So again, the same sort of trend. And, you know, we've said, we've got this little segment now, get out of Victoria segment, right? And here's a little snapshot with significant rises in utility costs over the last 12 months and claims of Victorian economic mismanagement. So once again, there is a reason why the Melbourne market is behaving the way it is. But again, listings are significantly down from where they were.
Yeah, this is only adding and fueling the investors from getting out of the out of Victoria. And the other thing, obviously, that we didn't raise in the previous at the beginning of the show, one of the other reasons why I think you did touch on it a little bit. One of the other reasons why investors are getting out of both Queensland and Victoria also is the fundamental changes to the rental housing policy, yeah. The tenancy laws, which is not a bad thing. It's not, but the thing is, the way it was implemented, the way it's being executed, it is totally put things in shambles, and where there's no clarity, people will take you could say people don't sit around to get educated. They just take the first option. The first option out is to get out. So these are the changes. And so obviously with more changes and more economic pressures there, where he talks about 22% more in gas and 28% more in electricity costs in the past 12 months, is it any wonder? That people are getting out, not only a lot of it's obviously investors, but pretty soon we're going to have business owners that are going to, as I say, that are going to be jumping the border or already starting to jump the border, and it's going to be a no-go zone. Who knows?
Absolutely. Well, let's look at Brisbane briefly. We sort of mentioned Brisbane right at the top of the show with all of their changes to the rental laws up in Queensland. But the Brisbane story is pretty similar. So here's last week, 3,256 listed properties in the Brisbane region. And this week, small fall, 3,219. So it's the same. But of course, it's a bit of a smaller market and still very tight. And Edwin, on the auctions, well, you know, of course, next week it's going to be Christmas, I was going to say, Easter. Next week is going to be Easter. So very, very quiet week on the auction front.
Yeah, and just going back to Brisbane, Martin, let's not forget that Brisbane, they're actually tracking 25% less or 1,000 less listings than what they are now, which is really 30% less, more or less, 30% less listings than what they the listings were in 2023. So they've had a huge drop. It's just that drop's been sustainable at that point. Yeah, auctions. We had the surge in auction numbers last week because obviously everybody compressed it, brought the auctions forward. Now we've only got 95 going to auction on over the Easter weekend. For whatever reason they're still there, and it's going to be more interesting to see what happens next week. Whether the numbers pick up again. I get the feeling that they probably sit anywhere around your low 600s, because of obviously we're getting closer to that to winter, so there'll be less all around, less for sale, less going to auction. But if numbers do drop in terms of the overall for sale numbers, I wouldn't be surprised if the auction numbers increase, because a lot more people will be. A lot more real estate agents will be coercing their vendors or the sellers to take the property to auction because of the high demand and the emotion that'll drive, and we're going to see some crazy stories coming out over winter.
Absolutely. Well, talk about crazy stories. Let's look at the rental stories. So, if you look at Sydney, last week we had 8,426 properties for rent in the Sydney region. This week, 8,477. So, you know, a little move. In Melbourne, 8,345 last week. an H267, so a reduction in the Melbourne story as listed properties for rent as well. So pretty tight on the rental side. We know from contacts that we've got that many people are still struggling to find anything that's reasonably priced in the rental sector. Huge numbers of people rock up to try and compete for it. So it's a real, real sad story. And many people are completely homeless at the moment. And these numbers suggest that that's going to continue for some time.
No, look, they will, unfortunately. And they're talking about something like 700 and something thousand students have been tracked to have come in over 2023. Another 153,000 or something have come in over February. It's just crazy. Where are they going? Where do you put them? And this is why the dynamics of the Sydney market and the way it plays out. You know, we have to be very, very careful and very cautious as to what we do, to understand who we're competing with, what they're looking for, and what we should be looking for when we advise our clients. And you know, because of the, again, we go back to the groups that very much are leasing a lot of these properties out by way of, you know, budget accommodation or room lettings or hot bedding, whatever you want to call it. You know, and this is puts a you know, a lot of pressure on the rental market. One, you could say at least it's accommodating a lot of people. But the other side of that is that people are living in squalor. People are living cramped up. There's not a lot of attention to security measures and to safety by way of smoke detectors. Safety switches on power boards. And the other thing that I dare say is being swept under the carpet is the dangerous aspect of having so many people living in a home, not knowing who and what background they have, and when you've got groups in homes. So look, it's a sad state of affairs out there. Apart from the fact that people are, as I said, they're living in squalor and they don't even want to whinge or complain about anything, even under a normal rental situation where you've got a property, a licensed property manager looking after your property. You don't want to be whinging and bitching or complaining about issues in your property for fear of getting evicted. So there's a lot of psychological pressures and fears that people are living in, and it's, it's crazy. It's a crazy state of affairs, Martin.
Yeah, and talk about crazy as we come into the Easter season, and of course we wish all our viewers a safe and joyful Easter weekend. It's worth reflecting on the fact the price of cocoa has tripled, which means that the cost of Easter eggs are going up. So that could be an inflationary pressure. Although what we're finding is, and whether you're seeing it in your neck of the woods, but the size of the Easter egg and the thickness of the chocolate has been reduced. So we've got shrinkflation on Easter eggs as well, Edwin. So wherever you look, we have issues.
Yeah, for a minute there, I was thinking to myself, where the hell is Martin going with Coco? And then I thought, oh, Coco, it wasn't Coca. So, I don't know where those prices of the white substance has gone to, but all I know is from the criminal legal eagles and the banter around the legal traps, there's a lot of small crime in relation to those substances, and again, it goes back to the state of the market, the state of affairs. So we've got we do have shrinkflation. And look, for what it's worth, Martin, I think we can have a joyful life by having less as well, and by having less in terms of things, objects. And even food. But what really counts is having that, as you say, that joyful Easter get-togethers and whether it's over a barbie, whether it's over whatever, and just even visiting friends, relatives, and that, and yeah, that's immeasurable, the richness of having that support groups. And yeah, just encourage our viewers and followers just to reach out to family and friends and those that may be spending Easter alone, and yeah, just a bit of sharing a little Easter egg with them goes a long way.
Spot on, everyone. Well, thank you very much for today. And we should reassure everybody that we'll be back on the holiday Monday after Easter. Come rain, come shine. We'll be here talking about the greatest news around property and politics and everything else. So I'll look forward to that. And I hope you get some time off over the Easter weekend, Edwin, and enjoy the hopefully good weather.
Oh, look, let's hope it stays that way. So far, so good. All the best to you, Martin, and keep on looking for Kate.
Absolutely. See you later. Cheers.